Welcome back, everybody, to a midsummer edition of the Be Better podcast. Devin has contacted me in the 36 hours that I am back in the Global World headquarters here. And so we're going to rip out a pod because it's so necessary because there's so much going on right now.
So much to talk about.
So much. Devin's dropping names I've never heard of or at least couldn't recognize. And he's just gave me the smirk. He's like, we'll talk about it on the pod. I'm like, all right, well, this is a loaded question. But Devin, how's your summer been so far? I know that the things going in, and specifically I want to know is, how did Thea do at Grandma's?
Devin Palmer, Remax Results. Such a pleasure to join you today. From the Final K / MSP Moves Remax Results, World HQ, recording studios.
Oh, that's how it's going to go.
Listen, I'm gonna start shoehorning my branding in.
Then I'm going to give you, there better be a sponsorship check that follows this too.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. My wife ran a 3:42 at Grandma's Marathon.
Nice.
And she ran the most dead set, monotone, metronomic, even splits you could ever hope for.
So boring.
Just real boring. And it was a tough day because it was humid the first half of the run and then in the sun and kind of hot the back half of the run. So multiple people who experienced it melted down or really had some distress or fell apart later in the event. And she and my good friend CJ just set a really steady, unremarkable, not going nuts pace and just held it all the way through.
Nice. And for those that don't know or are not familiar with Grandma's Marathon, point to point, Two Harbors to Duluth, relatively downhill along the lake.
It's more of a rolling course than anyone thinks about. I ride the course as much as I can when I'm up there because it's old Highway 61 right along Lake Superior.
Yep.
But it does roll. It's a gently, gently rolling course.
Okay.
Yep.
So congratulations to her.
And kids saw her. We were waiting at mile 22. I was out there with all the kids, and it was a hoot. We had a great weekend.
Nice. And now on to you at Twin Cities.
Twin Cities.
How's your marathon training going?
Progressing really steadily. My long runs, I just did my first 15-miler, and I kept a really just consistent pace, so I'm really happy. I'm integrating gels. I'm practicing a little bit of nutrition. I'm being more mindful of that than I have in the past. So I'm not waiting for the bonk, getting proactive, actually being a grown-up about it. So
that's good.
Pace is fine. Everything's on pace for October to be fine. Not remarkable, but fine.
Do you have a goal?
Not really. I think it'll be in that same neighborhood of mid 3-hour range.
Okay. So, do you want to beat her?
Yes.
Okay. That's all we need to know.
As long as it's 3:41 or faster, we're all good.
That's awesome. How are you dealing with the heat with this long training though? Do you do it more in the morning? Do you avoid the midday heat? Are you embracing the midday heat and trying to hit it at peak time?
Just managing it. Out of schedule necessity, I go pretty early. So my Tuesday, Thursday runs, I go 6. My Sunday longer run, I go 6:30 or 7.
Okay.
So just going as early as I can, managing it as best I can. I ran at 6 a.m. this Tuesday. I just did 6 miles. I was completely swamped, just wet with sweat by the end. And it wasn't even hot. It was just pure humidity.
How about the air quality? Because we are in central southern Minnesota, Manitoba wildfire. Air quality has brought in some of the particulates up to into the 100 zone, whereas they say the safest you should be outside doing anything is like in 50.
I'm skittish about that. So 2 weeks ago, my long run, Sunday morning, it was just nasty air and it was hot and humid. I ran in the basement, did 14 on the treadmill.
Oh, that just sounds not fun at all.
Sir, it was not. But you do what you got to do. I'm just working. It's a stepping stone towards the bigger goal. So you make it work.
Yeah. What are you watching when you're doing that?
Well, the timing's good because I can watch tour stages.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
So you can do like almost a whole tour stage.
Yep.
That's a big, long one.
Yes. So it's been fine. I've been very happy. Now,
that's
let's
good.
Talk about your riding. You've been riding a lot, I see.
God, not at all. I mean, it's tough, right? So there's a couple things that are going on. I kind of have to keep a bike packed for when I travel. So like, you know, putting one together, taking it apart, bringing it where I need to go. Spend a lot of time up north.
Yep.
And my fat bike has stayed here because of just transportation of how we're getting things up there. A little more difficult. Jill's bike is up there. You know, I've ridden sporadically. And I feel, you know, I physically don't like myself for that. I miss riding. Jill asked me today, when she goes, I said, you know, you were coming over, and she's like, you guys going riding? And I go, no, we're doing the podcast.
We're talking.
We're just going to talk.
We're just going to talk.
I miss it, but we're going to be, so we're going to Portugal this week, and we are going to, we have a day of, like, mountain biking over there.
Oh, nice.
So, I mean, it's not going to be, like, you know, hard stuff, because it's, you know, a couple of people, but, yeah, I mean, I miss riding the bike, but it's, the things that I have that I've sacrificed my own personal time for are time with the kids.
Yep.
Time with my father.
Yep.
Time with my aunt and uncle who are in from New York. And then work with the U.S. Paralympic Program development. We had two talent ID programs that we've done. We had to go out to University of Charlotte or University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and kind of a, like reimagine what this camp is like at a new campus. Been tough because normally we do those at the Olympic Paralympic Training Center. Out in Colorado Springs. So just a lot of things have been moving, a lot of travel, and it's not slowing down because I come back from Porto and we go right to Milwaukee almost for AGNC.
If you're under real intense time constraints, I'm wondering if a different kind of a program, more of like a, you know, really time efficient, something like TRT. Why don't you just go on TRT, Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to do
that. You want to get in shape, lose a little, shed a few pounds.
Do a GLP-1 regimen and just go straight to that. You know what would be best is if I could run. That would probably be.
On the road, there's nothing easier.
There's nothing. And it has always been a real go-to for me. But ever since I hurt my back, it just has not been in the cards. And, you know, I tried. I really did. I tried to. Tried to get that to work, and it's still to this day my right leg is not 100%. I still even walking you can feel it.
Really?
Yeah. It's something that I'll have for the rest of my life. Playing hockey, it's not affected because of balance and power usage, so I've not seen it be an issue there. And then when I bike, I watch power balance. It's a little lower on the right side, but not too bad. So my modalities of moving are biking and hockey. So, and I'll have to keep with that, but it's not easy to do when you're on the road.
CrossFit?
No. TRX.
TRX.
I've been using the Vitruvian a lot. I've been hitting that.
Get
you
on
know, doing strength.
Get on
strength
TRX. Get on TRT. TRT and TRX and just get shredded.
All the T's. Going to get all
just
the T's.
Shredded.
All the T's going. I think the kids call it swole nowadays. Dev, what we need to kick right into talking about this young phenom that I read about. I think his name is Tad Age Pogačar. I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Tad Age Pogačar.
Holy crap! Is this guy? I mean, first of all, you could easily make the claim that in the last couple of years, what he's done, he is maybe he will be considered one of, if not the best, bike rider ever.
He's in the pantheon, and we're comparing him to guys who dominated the sport decades and decades ago when it was a weaker, less specialized sport.
Highly pharmaceutical-aided sport.
Those guys, to be a stage race champ and a one-day champ back in the day, it wasn't as split out as it is now. We've had decades and decades of refinement where the best of each sub-niche of the sport dominate their sub-niche, and for him to be the stage race champ of our time and also in contention for one of the most dominant one-day guys of our time, it's really remarkable.
Yeah, so we're recording this on the day after maybe the largest stage, the most celebrated stage of this year's tour, which is the climb to Mont Ventoux. To see him go up and go against Vindo and just be, it was a lot like Ulrich and Armstrong. You know, and they were just one in front of the other, battling back and forth. And I think, you know, he just is too strong. I don't know that there is anybody that can contain him. Because right now, as of right now, he, if we look at statistics of this year's tour, he is only after the first day, he was 18th. After the first day, first stage, he has sat either first or second. And he has been in the first, he has held the yellow jersey since stage 12. He currently sits second in the green jersey, and he holds the polka dot jersey. That's crazy. I mean, just how dominant he has been. He has won four stages. Yesterday, he was fifth. Have you watched today's stage yet?
Nope.
Okay. You want to know what happens?
I don't mind. For the listener,
They're like listening to this. It's probably already done by the time they're listening.
I'm saying I'll take the hit.
Okay.
I'll have Devin's the spoiler the for the listener's sake.
Finished 27th on today's stage, still holds the yellow jersey, still sits second in green, still holds the polka dot jersey as well. So, I mean, he's taken home everything right now. And he is just on the climb. He's at least 4 minutes in front of Vingegaard.
Vingegaard.
Whatever.
Jonas Vingegaard.
Yeah. So what's your take on Pogacar?
He has the high-end climbing endurance, so it's hard to break him on a longer climb, you know, because he can sustain just as well as Vingegaard. Because when Vingegaard has beaten him, it's been on the steepest parts, because Vingegaard is teeny, teeny, tiny, or when he's able to kind of grind him out, or when Vingegaard has had more team support and they can kind of double team Pogacar and attack him. And Pogacar's so game, he'll chase, and you can maybe wear him out. Or so Pogacar's been beaten when he was at maybe 85 or 90 or 95%, because he was coming off of an injury. And then the first year he got beat, his team ran out of gas. He lost a bunch of teammates and he just had no support. When Vingegaard had Primoz to double team Pogacar. So he is vulnerable, but only under some circumstances. This year he's been right at the pointy edge with the time trialing. So you can't beat him in the time trial. In the past, Vingegaard has maybe had an edge on him in the time trials. So if they're equal, or Pogacar's a little ahead in the time trials, Pogacar's endurance climbing is just as good. You can't break him a long ways out. And his speed is far superior to any other pure climber. So he can pop and attack you at will. There's not a lot of tools in the shed to overpower this guy.
I mean, what else can you throw at him? I mean, you mean even a team coming at him can't really throw. Because you have to have the whole, like, a number of people that can even hang.
And Visma has a phenomenal team, but you can see it wears on them. Like the other, a couple mountain stages ago, Pogacar had support riders further into the final climb than Vingegaard did.
Yeah.
So it's just tough. He's got the pop of the, you know, to attack and accelerate. He's got, you know, sustained high watts, and he's got time trialing.
He's got a lot.
Where do you eke out a big enough edge? Even if you're beating him, like Remco Evenepoel can beat him in a time trial.
Yep.
But if you can only beat the guy by 10 or 30 seconds, if you don't have a full, they're not doing like 50K time trials anymore.
Not enough.
You can't power 3 minutes into the guy.
No, you can't. And also, you know, the other thing is I think he's very well respected inside the peloton as well. Yeah. You know, he went down in the last couple K, was a 3-4K out from the finish in Toulouse, where he got clipped, his front wheel got clipped, and he went and hit like a traffic barrier, and he got up, and Vingegaard had held up his group to let him come back in, which is, that's respect.
Yep.
That's what cycling has that a lot of other sports don't. There's no attack right there. Because they could have attacked. They could have put the gas on, then he would have had a very difficult time to come back. But they let him come back so that it was equal. And I think that's great. Now, did you see that crash?
I sure did, yeah.
Who in the heck was the Shimano guy that comes out of nowhere in the blue jumpsuit, which I need one of those, by the way, too. And he's like all masked up, and he just like totally gets that rig rolling in like 2 seconds. I mean, you know, I was asking where Jared Voorhees was the last couple weeks. Haven't seen him. I don't have confirmation that wasn't maybe him being contracted out to work on a bike in the middle of the race.
So what you're alleging is JV Bike Repair, Jared Voorhees, our good friend.
Yeah.
He may be the anonymous man, the anonymous Shimano
he's
man.
He's the mass Shimano guy. He doesn't want to have anybody like know about it, so he's there.
We can't disprove it.
No, we can't. So that stage was crazy. So not only do we have the Shimano guy, but we also have to recognize the white shirt, khaki pants security guy that did the clothesline of the dude who started sprinting down in the finish chute. Like, he not only clotheslined him, but he threw him over the fence and then threw him to the ground.
I generally don't condone violence, but the degree to which that person is putting a lot of people in peril and, of course, potentially inciting more perilous incidents.
Yeah.
You have to come down pretty hard and firm and say, this is legally unacceptable. Culturally, we don't accept this.
No.
Get out of here. This won't be tolerated. And there'll be a very there should be a pretty severe consequence immediately for being that person.
I'm sure he went home in the backseat of a gendarme car.
And
he probably
the Tour de France is one of the biggest sporting events in the world,
yeah,
bar none. And it's the pride and joy of that whole nation. If you're going to disgrace it and endanger it, there has to be a pretty harsh...
I mean, and he had no sign. He was just running down the mm-mm. side. It's like
can't be allowed.
But where did that guy come from? The security guy. Like, oof. He just came out of nowhere.
Kapowie.
And just, yeah, like, and then you can see when the guy was going to get confronted. He's like, okay, stop. Puts his hands up and he's like, nope, sorry. You're going over the boards. This is going to be like.
We remember, was it the 2008 Olympic marathon where De Lima, a Brazilian guy, was in the lead. He was accosted by some so-and-so, accosted him mid-race. And it so disrupted him, he ended up getting third. So it's like some kind of instigator interfered in the Olympic marathon.
I don't remember this.
To the point, I think it was the year that Meb was second. I forget who actually won. It may have been the Italian gentleman won, and then Meb was second, and then this De Lima from Brazil was third. So it's like, okay, you're interfering in a very significant way. It's like the crowd dragged that nasty individual off of De Lima, but it's like, the damage was done. It's like, we just can't tolerate.
No. They put the barricades up for a reason.
You just can't accept it. It's like, there should be some... Again, I don't condone violence in any kind of way, in any kind of a situation, but it's like, it needs to be communicated that's completely unacceptable to meddle in that manner and endanger people in that manner.
And you think about the last 100 feet, last 100 meters of a major stage race. This is a flat state or a flat finish. So there was a lot of speed going in.
Thank goodness it was a breakaway. But there were the two guys, it was Vanderpool and some other guy, were well clear, but they were still whizzing by at 30 to 40 miles an hour.
And we've seen things that have gone sideways. Remember when Tor Hushov got hit with the green PMU sign and it sliced open his arm where it had to have major stitches? I mean, you know, people want to get close. And cycling is one of those sports where you can get closer to the racers at any time.
Yeah,
whether it's pre-race, post-race, finished, anywhere in the at any time, but it's gotten crazy. We have gone through crazy times, like some of those climbs where the groups just close in and they have the flares going with the smoke bombs, and it's just loud, loud, loud. And these guys have to have almost, I would say, earplugs in for 30 minutes. Can you imagine getting screamed at for 30 minutes? It'd be like you going home late at night. You just can't get away with it.
You're grinding it out. You know, they're riding faster than certainly you or I would up those mountains.
But, allegedly.
Well, you just told us about your training program. So, but to be going, 12 to 16 up these climbs, and you're relying on these lunatics to clear the way for you.
Or the motorcycle in front of you to keep the path. If you remember when the moto stopped in front of Froome.
Yeah.
And he rear-ended the moto.
Boop.
I mean, you're relying on just the perfect storm of things to happen so that it can go sideways so quick.
I wonder, you can almost see it on Vingegaard's face. He seems like such a more reserved, he's just a little tiny Danish dude. He seems so much more reserved. Pogacar's so game and so friendly and so outgoing. Oh, yeah. I wonder if your personality style, if Pogacar feeds off the energy and if Vingegaard is it creates distress for him to be in that kind of energy.
Yeah.
Or if it's all positive for all of them.
I don't know. I mean, you see him in the post interviews and he seems pretty jovial. I mean, not like Peter Sagan jovial.
No.
But he is smiles and he's articulate and he doesn't seem to doesn't show it. If it does, he doesn't show.
Yeah.
It doesn't show on the road. He's all business. You know, he's
how great is this
business.
Tour, though?
Oh, it's so good, so good. What have you? Do you have a favorite stage so far?
Do I have a favorite stage? Not really. Do you?
No, I mean when I look at a tour, I look at the places that I've been to. So if they go up climbs that
are
I've been on,
are you flexing on me and the listeners right
always,
now?
Always, always happening. You know, it's like you should just notice that. No, that's coming. Just know it's coming. So if they're going up climbs that I've been on or that I've gone up, that's a big piece. If they've gone through cities that I've gone through, I like that. Toulouse is one of my favorite cities in France. And, I have such great memories there when Jill and I first started dating. We were dating for 2 months and then we went to the tour. And we were in Toulouse and just such a beautiful city. So I loved like the start and the stop of that singular stage. I loved how it rolled out. I love the action that happened with, like, you know, the crashes are what make it, right? I think it's a lot like NASCAR. When it happened, I screamed. I was like, what? Because you don't know what's going to happen. Like, there's so much. He could have hit his shoulder on that barricade. He could have popped a clavicle. He'd be out. He's done.
When you look at the impact, it didn't look like any joke.
It rattled him. He spun him around. It didn't do anything to his bike. You know, his handlebars didn't break. His fork didn't break. So, you know, maybe kudos to his bike sponsor, but also he has his own personal mechanic on a moto right next to him. But it shows, like, how anything can happen at any moment.
Yep.
You know, but I think the Toulouse stage has been my favorite. I do love the big climbs.
Yeah.
I think the Ventoux climb was also, it's got to be a close second, maybe because they're just fresh in my head. But I do love the openness of Ventoux, just how epic that is. So you're climbing up above the tree line. It looks like a moonscape. They got the big weather station up on top. I just think you remember so many epic stages that happened in that area. I just think that would be those two really ring out in my head.
I enjoyed, maybe it was two, three stages ago. I think it was stage 15. The fellow from Ineos got away in the break and got a solo win on the final climb. He came in, or he got in the break on second or third climb, and then was away on the final climb and held off the big boys.
Yep.
And it was a clean battle then for Vingegaard and Pogacar. Just kind of dueling and taking pokes and prods at each other behind. So it was, you had a fun solo win, like a big, the most massive day in that guy's career. And then the other two kind of testing each other and playing around with each other. So it's just been so fun. Some of the subplots, like this character, Ben Healy, that guy's just game.
Yeah.
You know, him getting yellow and doing what he needed to do to secure a yellow and then hold on to it a little bit. It's just fun. Some of the subplots are really enjoyable. Jonathan Milan, it's been fun seeing his green jersey campaign.
Yep.
It's just been a great tour. It's interesting, when we spoke with Kurt last episode, he mentioned Evan Pohl is a young man, phenomenal physically, great champion. He's been in some catastrophic crashes, and is he recovered from that mentally or physically? And to see him, you know, showing his colors and contending to be another contender, another top three performance this year, and then seeing it kind of evaporate. It's interesting. And I went back to our conversation with Kurt.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, like a big crash can shake you. Yeah. I mean, it makes you gun shy.
I wonder how it affects Vingegaard as well.
I don't know. I mean, if you can hide it, but I think at some point in time, I mean, who knows? I think these high riders, they've got so much support on the backside. You know, you have to not just be supporting the body, but you have to support the head.
Yep.
You know, they have to be going through sports psychology. They have to be, like, getting wellness checks. You think about concussions, but just you know, whether it's ego or just base levels of fear. You know, you're moments from going over a guardrail and down a mountain at any point in time.
Yep.
I don't know. It definitely has been. Something that we don't see, we can only, you know, prognosticate on, but knowing how athletes, how fragile they can be, I would say that it's probably there, but they're hiding it pretty well.
I think of Wout.
Yep.
I think of the 2022 tour, his magical tour, where he was a dominant green jersey guy. He was in yellow for a while. He was winning time trials, and he was the most super domestique we've ever seen. He was the most uber domestique possible for Vingegaard that season.
Yeah.
And you see him now, it's quieter. He doesn't have that same magic, and he's been through a couple of nasty, gnarly crashes. And is he physically back, but just missing some of the mojo?
I don't know. You know, you have not seen him in there, and I think that's... We don't know where he's... I mean, obviously you would think that the tour would be his number one thing.
Yep.
But, you know, Wout's coming at it, like, you know, he was such a classics guy for so long, and maybe that's what he's reverting back to. I don't know. Maybe that's not a reason for him not to be where he's at. Team dynamics, who knows how that's happening behind closed doors. You know, we've seen teams melt down when the change of leadership has happened mid-race. I mean, I like Wout. I want to see him up there, but
It was just, it's interesting when you can see the tailwind is gone, whatever mojo or magic that fueled that amazing 2022.
Yeah.
Because he's on the same team. It's not like he switched teams or switched programs, and it's the same team riding under the same patterns for Vingegaard.
And it's 3 years, though. I mean, this is a young man's game. And, you know, he's not 20. He's not 22. He's, you know, he's...
Because are he and Vanderpool, are they 30 now?
I think they're 30 both. Okay. Yeah, they're up there. So, you know, age is a factor. I think being in the grind for so long has to, like, at some point in time, it just, do you have the momentum to go at it? Like, how long can you just get your butt kicked?
Yeah.
And say, yeah, I'm going to keep at this. And I think that comes in there. You mentioned characters.
Yep.
And, you know, this year, I really miss the Peter Sagan story. You know, he retired, he's gone. I think he's been replaced by an American.
Mr. Simmons?
Quinn, man. Quinn Simmons, you got to give it up to this kid, right?
Well, he's shown out on a couple of these good breakaway days. It's fun to see an American playing around at the front because we've had such a dearth of strength. And to see him a couple of days in a row and out there in these fun breaks, you got to love it.
Because he's like unabashedly American.
Yep.
He's sitting as of today, he's sitting 52nd, and he's, you know, what is he, third or fourth American? I think Sepp's still right. He's number one. He's up in the teens, first or like the fastest American right now.
Yeah.
But you don't, nobody talks about that.
Yep.
It's the mullet. It's the big handlebar mustache with a mullet, which has been relegated now to a ponytail. But you know, where a guy wearing the stars and stripes, he's going out there and he looks like Joe Dirt.
Yep.
You know, and he's just Joe Dirt on wheels, unabashed, doesn't apologize for any of it. And I think he is exactly what American cycling needs.
Joe Dirt on wheels.
I think Bob Roll would be him.
I just like that he's mixing it up at the front.
Yeah.
And taking the opportunities when you get them. Sepp Kuss, he had like one shot to win. I think 2021 he won a mountain stage, or was it 22? No, I think it was 21 he won a mountain stage. So it's like, and he won the 23 Vuelta under very strange circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a helper and he's very dedicated to that cause, but I feel like he's pretty invisible these days.
He is.
Matteo Jorgensen can mix it up, and it was a top 10 last year. Is
he related to Gwen?
You tell me. You tell me. You're like Gwen's uncle, so you tell me. Is he in the family?
There's no Gwen sanity here.
There's no Gwen sanity. Well, he's Matteo. I love Matteo. Can I tell you a quick chain of events?
Oh, please do.
So you know Matteo, top 10 at the Tour. We've been watching him the last few years grow and then get recruited onto Visma, and he's arguably one of Vingegaard's strongest top lieutenants.
Yep.
Maybe it seems like he's maybe faltering a little bit this year, or had a couple of more off days, but he's a strong presence and one of the top lieutenants.
Yep.
My friend Brandon Krawczyk beat the brakes off Matteo at the La Crosse Omnium in 2018.
What?
Matteo was rating for a young development team called Hot Tubes. So Matteo and Hot Tubes teammate were in a breakaway in the road race and crit with Brandon.
Huh.
In the road race, Brandon manipulated these little boys. Brandon was at the height of his powers. He's a high-end local Cat 1 kind of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's manipulating these boys, grooming them, if you will, and just destroys them in the finale. So manipulates them.
Use your words better.
Oh, is there some implications there?
There's no Epstein work here going on.
So he just totally rolls these sweet, tender 17-year-old boys.
Oh, my God.
And just takes them at the finish, okay? Am I using good phrases?
You are painting the worst possible.
Do you have bleep ability? Can you bleep out a lot of this?
No, I can't.
So Brandon, really good friend of mine.
Close personal friend.
He just
birthday cards? You guys write birthday cards back to each other?
He's just Brandon beats Matteo at both the crit and the road race.
Okay.
So Brandon, ipso facto, by the math, is better than Matteo Jorgensen.
100%.
I have beaten the brakes off Brandon.
Where and when and under what circumstances?
I was beating his brakes bad when we did our first four-hour ride to Chaska together 15 years ago in about 2013-ish. So we did a ride. I put the sword to him then. Most recently, 2016, we did a 3.5-hour ride together out west. We did 3x20-minute tempo. I'm just following along with his workout. So we're riding 3x20-minute tempo just side by side.
Yep.
We're coming into the finale of the last 20 minutes, and he gets a little gamey. And I outsprint him. I outsprint him up this little climb and mound there.
Jeez.
So I took Brandon, who took Mateo.
Well,
ipso facto, by cycling math, I am at least equivalent to Mateo Jorgensen.
Well, I mean, if we then extrapolate that out even farther, I think the last time we rode, I beat you on the West St. Paul Town Sprint at the sign. So that makes me faster than you.
Ipso facto.
And ipso facto makes me faster than Mateo Jorgensen all the way. I love how this works.
That's the math.
that's Strava math right there. Strava math.
I have beaten Brandon. Brandon has beaten Mateo.
Yep. And I have beaten you.
Well,
I'm just saying.
That's some people's memories of certain events.
Oh, that's pretty wild. Did Mateo, he never came through Chucky's program, did he?
No, he went straight to the big league. So it's super fun to see young Midwest talent make it at that level.
Yeah. Sepp came through Chucky's program.
Yeah. So it's just fun. Or Mike Woods rode for Chucky for a little bit, right?
I don't remember. Did he?
I think Woods.
It's been a couple years now since Chucky folded the program or folded on him.
Yeah. But it is fun to see Mateo up there mixing it up, and Dirt on a bike. You can't take. It's just fun.
You don't see Mateo, and you don't see Sepp as Americans though. They're not. They're just part of another group. Not that you see anybody else from their countries, but when you think of American riders, you know you want to think of.
You want to think Joe Dirt on Wheels.
Joe Dirt on Wheels, man. But I mean, sure, he's wearing the Stars and Stripes, which helps.
It helps for sure.
It definitely helps. But you know, he also has flavor and flair.
When it's to be in the mix, because he's not in a situation. Mateo has to be a very dutiful lieutenant. Yeah. Sepp has to be a very dutiful lieutenant. They have higher duties on some of these breakaway stages. Yeah, Quinn is free to fly or go for wins.
Yeah, I mean, his best was stage six. He took second overall in that stage. In that, you know, and he's been as high as eight in the green jersey. He sits 9 right now. I mean, he sits 12 in the white jersey. He's 52nd overall and 19th in the polka dot. I mean, he's up there in the mix. You know, I you got to respect that.
Yep.
And I think. You know, he's somebody that I would like. I think that the Trek jersey is just ugly, though. Like, I mean, sure, you got it. Like, is it Lidl? What is that?
We don't even know what
could you
the
have worse
does.
Product placement? It's like, it's what are they trying to be? The Iron Man, you know, source of power on the jersey? It's a terrible placement. Terrible placement. I'm just saying. But I love him. And I love him as a character. And that's what cycling has needed to replace.
100%.
You needed somebody. Now, if you need to throw maybe a wheelie in there somehow,
something
in there, that would be totally good. That would be totally good. So we have we have four stages left to go into Paris. Do you think there is any chance outside of a catastrophic anything that Pogacar is gonna falter?
He has seemed so unbeatable. Vingegaard certainly seems to be gaining momentum, but we'd need a complete collapse by Pogacar. We need
Kubacha.
It's been interesting these last few years. Like, they play the game so smart. It's fun. They swing a little bigger. Like, I think of Lance's last few tours.
Yep.
He didn't even win stages many of the tours, so he played a very conservative game to get the overall win. He knew his numbers, and he kept a very rigid formula to win. I certainly think of the Froome era as a very boring, methodical, dull, drab, doping-filled, just nasty era and just horrible era, and I just can't emphasize how much I dislike that boring style. These guys are a little more lively, but on the same token, they don't seem to be super vulnerable to falling apart completely. We rarely see them fall apart.
They seem more stable, don't they?
Yep.
You know, there's no meltdowns.
And now you might say, hey, Devin, you just described a boring era that was filled with doping. These guys are both more poppy and aggressive and still stable.
Mm-hmm.
gee whiz, they're clearly doping. I'm not saying they're saying the D word.
No one's saying that it's clean. And it probably, you know, there is assistance from pharma in there somewhere. The testing is different. I tried to and was hoping to get on this pod. My cousin's friend, who is an ex-FBI agent, retired and went to work for, who owns the tour? Is it ASOS?
ASO, that organization?
Yeah, and works for them in their mechanical doping control.
Oh.
So his job is to go over and do the scan to make sure that there's no motors in the bikes. And I wanted to have him on here, but he said he can't.
Probably. I can see that.
That would have been cool, though, right?
Can we blur out his voice?
No, yeah. Like, disguise him as, like, Elmo?
What I appreciate about this era, while, you know, we see head-to-head the times on certain historical climbs, we see it, okay, if you're in the same arc of times on historical climbs as all the dopers, the best dopers of the past eras, okay, we can infer from that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not self-righteous. Because that was my biggest beef with Lance, is he was always accused of it and always made a big fuss about not being it and then tied in the other narratives. And yeah. I never appreciated that. And then the hypocrisy with him ratting out and snitching on Tyler Hamilton. There was a lot to that where it was like, okay, you were doing it, but then you were also a jerk about it.
Yeah.
The Team Sky era of, we're different, marginal gains. You're literally the same. You're using the same template,
yep,
program.
Big money. Big egos, big program.
You're doing the same stuff, but lying about it. And it's like, I just don't hear anything from these big, dominant European teams right now. They just shut up about it. And I welcome that. Like, okay, if we're doing all the same stuff.
They're super quiet. I mean,
just don't lie to us.
I know. And on the big egos, you think back to, like, you see Wiggo now on Lance's podcast all the time. And for Wiggo to now be in there. Bradley Wiggins to be in, you know, mixing it up and being part of Lance. He was just as bad. You know, he's just as fragile of an ego, just as huge of an ego.
Yeah.
And it was a joke when he was riding that it was like, you know, Sir Bradley. Everybody's got a kowtow. When I was at the Tour of Britain and I was in the team car for UHC for a couple stages, and when Sir Bradley would drop back, everybody, all the staff would be like, all right, Sir Bradley's dropping back to take a royal whiz. We gotta, everybody slow down.
Yeah.
It's like, that doesn't exist now. At least you don't see it that exists. And I like that. I mean, is it boring? Maybe. I mean, I've watched like some of the stages, the old stages, the Lance, you know, pre-helmet stages.
God, that was a good time.
You know, those were good times. Like when he got clipped by the little bag, and then he fell and his bike was broken and he's like trying to climb. It's like, and you got, you know, Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin just going crazy on the mic. You know, those were the days.
Lance, for as much as you can criticize the gentleman, he'll pop out with a legitimate, very good point now and again. I've heard him make the point. Final climb, mountaintop finish. Let these boys whip the helmet off. Because right now, they're so obscured by these big, silly-looking helmets and these gigantic, silly sunglasses. Let them be the face of the sport again. Helmet off for the final climb. What's the objection?
Insurance. All you got to do is have somebody crash, and then their insurance is going to go, was that preventable?
Yep. But think of the showmanship that would bring back, and the stars could be stars.
You can see them. What can't you see? They're gonna wear the little cycling cap, so you're not looking for hair. Sunglasses, I think, unless you're talking about like the big, you know, Rudy Project dark helmet TT things that are just ridiculously like ugly looking. I mean, who thought time trial helmets could look any dumber?
Who thought they could get worse from the 2000s? The 2007 time trial helmet I remember, I wore.
And you put the same ginormous helmet, you put them on a little like pro female.
So you're disagreeing with me. You're arguing just to argue.
I don't think.
The wind in their hair, their personality on the
number
display.
Number one, I'm gonna against either one. So wind of their hair. They're going to be wearing a cycling cap because they're going to want the sweat out. They're not going to be having wind in their hair. Because they all wear, almost all of them wear cycling caps anyways.
Pogaccia sure doesn't.
Well,
doesn't.
He's one, he's two. I'm going to say that they're probably going to do that because somebody's going to say aerodynamics. Cooling. I think that the helmet doesn't take away from anything. And it doesn't take away from their face. You could say they got to take off their sunglasses, but, you know, are they going to take off sunglasses to protect their eyes?
You're not acknowledging the showmanship that we're talking about.
You're putting the riders at risk one more time for your own personal
I'm putting the riders in
game.
The spotlight they deserve. Oh. I'm putting them on a pedestal. I'm putting trust in these highly skilled professionals that they can ride at 12 miles an hour uphill without tipping over.
Without hitting their head.
I'm putting my belief in their ability.
So, to use a term I used last week, you're confident in your confidence.
I am confident in the boys. They can do it.
You think so. What happens if they clip a wheel? What happens if they clip a spectator and they go down and they smack their head and they're gone?
Hey, cost of doing business.
Yeah. You could also make the argument that there are fewer bicycle fatalities and accidents in Amsterdam than there are in the United States. And in Amsterdam, they have a much higher use of bicycles. And they don't mandate helmets in Amsterdam.
Do you agree with me? What you're saying is you agree with me.
I'm going to err on the side of the player's safety. So, do you think that you're going to see something better?
Yeah.
You're going to want to see... I mean, it's not like you got Quinn going in the finish line with his hair just kind of
You know
in
what
the
else
stream?
I missed? And I always enjoyed it the most on a sustained climb. And I think of Andreas Klöden.
Okay.
Klöden, I think he was... I think in 04 was Klöden's year where he was second or third. It was Ulrich fell off just a wee little bit, and Klöden was the guy from that team who was second or third that year. It was maybe Basso and Lance and Klöden instead of Jan in the mix. Unzipping the jersey on climbs.
Oh, I love the unzip jersey.
God, it feels so good when you do it. You feel so cool.
When I'm on a ride with you, I want to unzip my jersey just to let it fly, but I'm afraid my cell phone's going to fly out.
It's true. It's always...
But it is that, like, there was a time when I would wear a long, dangly medallion just so when I unzip the jersey when I was out of the saddle, it's flying back and
Swing
forth.
Jesus piece up there.
Oh, it's like, you know, God. It's like, Jesus, take the wheel and just give me the momentum back and forth.
So few of the guys... Do that for what? Maybe it's better materials, more breathable materials. Maybe they are concerned about the aerodynamic cost, and they're squeezing the marginal aerodynamic benefit of not unzipping. But I miss that. It was so cool.
It is. I think the kits are different, though. If you think back to the Lance days, the kit was actually a separate jersey and bib. That's what it was. It was two piece. Now they're one piece, more like almost like triathlon suits.
There's more and more skin suit. Again, going back to Brandon Krawczyk, who's essentially a tour-level rider because he beat Mateo Jorgensen one time in 2018. And I did beat him, no big deal. And Brandon wears skin suits willy-nilly just for regular riding. So I think the monocoque, let's call it the monocoque apparel. Is that the best word for it? Can we say monocoque?
I don't think so. Monocoque design?
Mostly you say it for frames, but onesies are back in the mix in a big way. I know they obviously do them in time trials. Are they doing them... I swear I've seen them where you can see it's seamless.
It is. It looks
on some of the other stages too.
I think they're wearing them all the time. I think when you can grab just they're I think aerodynamically a little bit faster. So I think they're using them for everything they can.
Marginal gains. That explains it.
But that's why they're not going all the way down. But it is right when you have the wings just flying.
It's so cool. Oh,
those were the days. Or when they would take their helmet off and put it on the handlebars. Yeah. Nowadays, when you see somebody riding and, like, let's say around the streets and they're not wearing a helmet, what do you think to yourself?
Organ donor?
Yeah, exactly. We say the same thing. We've seen guys like, you know, that ride. They're always like in their 60s or 70s. Little hat back. It's like,
But I
see your point. I do see your point. I do see how, as a viewer, as a fan, there is something there.
I'll say a Tadej personality where he's game. He's got a likability, a boyishness, an almost naivete, but fierceness. It's refreshing to see that versus the brutal, calculated, you know, austerity of a Lance where it's like he's just this dominating personality. And it's like here we have a dominating talent, but he doesn't have to be a big a-hole. Or Vingegaard is like an intense, serious, maybe a little quieter, but not an unpleasant, challenging personality. I love this crop of personalities. I think of Carlos Sastre, who existed.
Yep.
He got the one tour win, was it 2010, like in between eras. He just wasn't a big presence in any kind of a way.
No, he, you know, he, as a, I think he was Colombian, wasn't he?
I think he was just Spanish.
Was he just Spanish? I mean, and he won the Vuelta. I don't think he won the Tour.
He won. I think he got one win in the Tour, in between different eras.
Okay, I because he
you wrote can for, check me on that. I might be wrong.
He rode for CSC back in the day when I'll just pick up a little photo here that I took in a little town called Toulouse with me and another guy from there. Oh, Yvonne Basso, is that it? Oh, is that signed too? Is that signed?
Oh, wow. Oh, I see that you're not in a jersey. You didn't ride with him?
No, I did not. I was a spectator, but I was a spectator next to him
because I rode with Brandon, who rode with Mateo. So. I've ridden with Mateo,
but you know where this was signed is when I went to the Team CSC training camp, and I did ride with them.
So. Is Bjarne Riis still kicked out of the sport?
He has been blackballed. He was. I mean, you talk about like dirty. I mean, he was dirty. I'm surprised Lance has not embraced Bjarne.
Lance should just have Bjarne on the team. How funny is it to see Bjarne's big year, and he's balding. He's this stern, stoic, Norse, balding adult man, and here he's. We have these sweet boys now. Where
he was a Hulk.
Pogacar's just. He still looks like he's about 19 years old. He's just the sweet and boyish, and it's like Bjarne was bald.
And if you went back and you Googled like the most memorable moments of Bjarne Riis as a rider, do you remember what the most memorable event that he ever was in?
I don't. I'm too young and cool.
That was when his bike broke down on the TT, and he chucked it. Remember the bike toss? The Bjarne Riis bike toss. Okay.
Clients are calling.
That's a wife's
legal. Legal is calling.
Wife's calling.
Yeah, like wife's I said, calling. Legal is calling.
Wife's calling, yeah. So we'll see how that goes.
We've made some allegations on here that the legal department is already checking us
They're
on.
Totally checking us on, yeah. but yeah, Bjarne Riis bike toss. Go look it up on
YouTube,
the Bjarne Riis bike toss. Devin, on that note, I'm going to have to wrap up here because we're going to have to get a little short today. Sure. Are there any other plugs that you need to make besides?
Well, after we wrap here, I've got two offers in on my listing in Mount of Medi, so I'll be negotiating that deal. My listing in Plymouth is sold. Inspection is tomorrow. So things are going really well in real estate. If you need to buy or sell our house, I sure would love to serve you.
And how are folks going to see you on social media or in YouTube? You got a couple of shows that you have and some things?
I have a fake HGTV show called Ben and Devin House Heaven. I have a real podcast with you called Be Better, and I have another podcast called The Cycling Dads Podcast.
Does that
which
still
you
exist?
Have been on. Here and there, we've recorded three times this year and haven't recorded since.
But you're also on Instagram. How are people seeing you? Because I've seen you.
Devin Palmer MSP. I forget exactly.
Yeah.
You find MSPmoves.com is my website.
Devin Palmer, just get in there.
Devin@MSPmoves.com is my email. Email me. Secrets and facts about Chris I can bring up on the next episode.
Oh, no. No, we got to start talking in the next, like, I would say 6 months about planning the sale of the headquarters here and how do we kind of
liquidating the HQ.
How do we make that work for the best?
For the better. I do.
And then at the end, when we don't use you as our realtor, then we'll make sure.
Chris Lindahl is in here. Well, Devin, we would have used you, but me and Chris Lindahl have the same first name, so we thought it was synergy.
And he had a guarantee.
For the listener, I do. Every time I see a lake listing on your lake come up, send you the listing just to abuse you. Like, hey, how long's the boat ride down to this one? Maybe I should get this one. And they range from like 900K, 500 to 900K on the cheap side if it's a dog listing to 2 and 3 million because your lake is a rich person lake. I don't know if people know that about you.
Wow.
But I'll send you a $2 million listing like, hey, Chris, should I get this one?
And I'll say, that's a terrible list. That's a terrible house on a terrible, terrible point.
Not
There's
kind.
No fish out in front of there? No, it's if it wasn't for my grandfather buying like three plus acres for, I think it was $4,000 back in 1950.
$18 back in the 50s.
Oh, this is crazy. And then building the house that we would not be. Yeah, we get several cash offers a year for people to buy our property.
Oh, I believe it. I absolutely believe it. Yeah.
It'll never happen.
Yeah,
never ever happen. Devin, good luck watching the rest of the tour. I will chat with you when we get back from Portugal, and we'll do a wrap up and see how if there's any damage that happened in the last four stages here today. So, for all of you who are listening, stay cool. Stay hydrated, and for those of you out there racing, make sure to take Devin in the town sprint so you can claim to be a better cyclist than Mateo.
Trickle down superiority over Mateo Jorgensen.
It is trickle down economics here on the Be Better podcast. And until next time, we ask that you just be a little better.